Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on Monday, we can officially say it, the 2017-2018 NBA season, it's officially underway. Folks, the kids have officially reported to school. The Rockets and most other teams around the league held their media day on Monday. That means that training camp opens tomorrow, Tuesday, and it's one of those fun days on the entire NBA calendar for me. Of course, as a media member, it's fun to get to ask questions and to hear these guys talk at length about what they did over the summer, but what's really special about it is the depth of the answers you get. Yes, all the key stakeholders are available, everyone from James Harden, Chris Paul, and the players all the way up the chain to Mike D'Antoni, Daryl Morey. All of that stuff is really nice, but what's great about Media Day is you really get some bigger picture answers about where the franchise has been, where you think they're going, just basically more than just the run-of-the-mill, oh, we're worried about what's happening at the next practice or the next game, because the NBA season, it's a grind. Generally, what questions we get to ask over the next few months are just going to be day-to-day, week-to-week type answers, starting tomorrow at training camp. Everyone's going to want to talk about what they did that day and what their goals are for the next session and the first preseason game, which is next week, and the first regular season game on October 17th. Media Day is really good because you get to get some insightful answers, big picture, the kind of stuff that you guys, as diehard fans of the Rockets, that's what y'all want to know. So Media Day every year is a treat for me because everyone is thinking bigger picture, more philosophical base. And so for those of us that are diehard NBA fans that live for the kind of depth that we've discussed, well, all summer long and for over a year now here at Locked On Rockets, Media Day is a particular treat, and Monday was no exception. So today's episode, I am going to, toward the end, preview training camp. But for most of this episode, I'm going to try and contextualize what I think the primary takeaways were for Media Day on Monday. I'm not going to do too much literal reading. I assume those of you that are following me here on Locked On Rockets will have probably already heard the highlights. Maybe you've already listened to the videos themselves over at Rockets.com, or if you haven't done that, certainly you've probably seen the quotes on Twitter. I've retweeted a ton at Ben Dubose, and pretty much every Rockets follow in the universe has done a great job today. MK Bauer, Jonathan Fagan, Clutch Fans, Mark Berman over at Fox 26, pretty much pick your source. They've all done a great job of reporting, and if you want that information, I'm sure you've most likely already seen it, but if not, it's very easy to find. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time restating the obvious, what most of you already know. What I'm going to try and do in today's show is contextualize what I think the most significant developments were today and what we learned from that Media Day session over at Toyota Center. Now, that's kind of the lead-off introduction for, I think, where we're going to go today. One thing I want to make very clear once, there was a lot of discussion on non-basketball issues today. You guys can guess what those issues are. One, of course, was Hurricane Harvey. Still hasn't even been a month since Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Texas and brought devastating flooding to the Houston area. Obviously, thousands of folks still affected, and there have been some Rockets, most notably James Harden, Clint Capella, Chris Paul, that have done some great work. Pretty much everyone has, and the organization as a whole, Les Alexander, who's still technically the owner, donated $10 million, which is more than anyone that I've seen in the Houston community that is individually donated. So the Rockets have done a lot. They talked about that. The other things, non-basketball related, of course, there's a ton going on in the world these days. We all know the NFL protests, various reactions to Donald Trump. And again, I'm sure you've already seen the quotes. If you haven't, they're all over local news, the Chronicle. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have said those things. I absolutely support their right to free expression. I've retweeted a lot of those statements on my timeline. And in general, I'm a big proponent of freedom of speech, open expression. I think democracy, whether you're talking local, national, global, I think democracy is at its best when all the stakeholders in the process are heard. Basically, get as many voices as you can into the process. And so as long as it's civil, as long as it's peaceful, then I think raising points of concern to the people, whether it be local, national, wherever, that are representing you, I think that's the hallmark of a healthy democracy. I think that's great that the Rockets are becoming more civic-minded and getting involved. I commend them for doing that, and largely I agree with them on a lot of the points that I've heard thus far, but at the same time, what I'm trying to do is balance all of that with the reality that podcasts are about customization. One of the reasons that you guys come to me here at Locked on Rockets is because rather than, say, a general sports radio show where you might have to sift through 3 or 4 hours worth of commentary just to get to one 10-minute Rockets segment, when you come to Locked on Rockets, you know what you are going to get. So while I understand that the Rockets are speaking out on these issues, I largely support them doing it. As I said, I think that's part of a healthy democracy. Whether you agree with them or you disagree with them, I think being able to openly share ideas is a big part of it. And I think, unfortunately, these days, a lot of folks think that democracy is just show up and vote on election day, whenever that is, and then just live, just sit there quietly and live with the results, whether they're for better or for worse. And that's not really the case. What democracy is about is the government representing the people. And, you know, if you're a citizen, and most of us are Americans, many of us are Houstonians, then yes, if you have opinions about what issues are significant to the people that are representing you, then yeah, I think it's commendable that the Rockets do it. And I think it's commendable that you guys, as, like I said, Americans, Houstonians, whatever it may be, you do it. And I'm happy to do that on my Twitter timeline. If you want to tweet me about it, I'll certainly talk about it. I have today. If you want to email me, I'll talk about it more. I'll even have a beer with you, but and discuss it, whether you agree with me or not. I think open discourse is what we need more of, because I think too many people just kind of live in a bubble, an echo chamber. And I think a free and open exchange of ideas is a great thing. However, on this podcast, it's all about customization. So while I think it's great that the Rockets are speaking out, and I encourage them and anyone to make their views known through their proper channels, and I think individual social media pages are certainly appropriate for that, at the same time, this podcast is about Rockets basketball, and it's about the customization, and I don't want you guys to have to sift through some commentary that you, whether you agree with it or not, you may not want to hear so much as I'm sure you're turning in here just to get news about Rockets basketball. So while, yes, a lot of media day today did focus on news and political issues, at the same time, while the Rockets did talk about them, at their core, those are not Rockets issues. Those are essentially the Rockets speaking out as citizens on news, politics, whatever the issue may be. So that's kind of my just general statement on that, not just today, but going forward. The Rockets did allude to potential for maybe some sort of unity demonstration, of course, that being in response to the NFL protest yesterday. And I won't say that we'll never discuss it, but in general, I don't plan to do it often on the podcast. Now, I may do it on social media, my personal page, because I think that's completely fair game. I'm not a stick-to-sports guy at all. I think generally people should be heard. But for this podcast, today, and especially going forward, it's going to be about the basketball. I just felt compelled at the jump to discuss it once. It's not that I'm oblivious to it. I did note it. I did think it's a big deal. But here on the podcast, we're going to try and make this as much about the basketball and the on-court product for the Rockets now and going forward as we can. Now, as far as basketball-related topics that were discussed in our two-hour session today, heard from a ton of players, pretty much every significant rotation piece was there and available to us today, as were Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey. The biggest name that I wanted to hear from, and we did get to hear from, thankfully, was Ryan Anderson. And the good news, there's no animosity at all that I could tell after the summer of on-again, off-again trade rumors with Carmelo Anthony that inherently all had to involve Ryan Anderson because it was the only way for the math to work, short of a trade that obviously was not for the benefit of the Rockets, such as trading both Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza. So Ryan, I understand, and I've said for a while, I did a podcast earlier this month why I didn't expect him to be a chemistry problem if the Carmelo deal did not happen, which it ultimately did not, but it's good to actually hear from him. Now, it was encouraging last week, the Q&A from Daryl Morey, I addressed that towards the end of last week. The Q&A that Daryl did with Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle said that he had talked to Ryan as of last Wednesday, and today we learned from Daryl that he had talked to Ryan throughout the summer. And there was never a case for Ryan to get that upset. I think it's one of those things he understands. He's been in trade rumors before. In this case, Carmelo's a big name. He's close with Chris Paul and James Harden. Of course, the Rockets are going to have at least some low level of interest. And, well, in this case, it was more than that. I'm not sure exactly the depths of the discussions that Daryl Morey told him. But the bottom line is, he's comfortable with where he is in the NBA. He's comfortable in his own skin. That's a big part of it. He's comfortable with his contract. As he said, he got his money. He's blessed. He knows that he struck when the iron was most hot in terms of that first couple of days of July 2016. It's far from him that got a little bit overpaid on a relative basis to the rest of the NBA. It was just the perfect timing, and he's grateful. And he seems, again, very secure in his own skin. But the best part of it, he said he was thrilled to be back. He did not want to be traded. He and his now wife, he got married this summer, loved being in Houston, and that's all you can want to hear. And the other players, they were happy to have him back too. James Harden, who along with Chris Paul is the de facto leader of the team, said it's great to have him back. And that's all you could ask for. It's been an uncomfortable summer. We know that these trade discussions that have drug on for 2.5 months, it's kind of just put a cast a shadow over the team, because every discussion the last couple of months has been about, is it going to happen or is it not? But that's not a knock against Ryan Anderson. And even if he's a little overpaid, and that might be the reason that Carmelo's not here, that does not mean he's a bad basketball player. He was a good basketball player for them last year. He was a big part of why they won 55 games. And he could be even better this year. He actually said he lost about 10 pounds and now looks even more athletic than before. So he's put more of a premium on athleticism. He's also said he wants to be a better rebounder. And I do think being a little quicker could help him get some of those rebounds in space that he could not get last year. So I think from Ryan, what you want to hear was that he understands what the Rockets were thinking through this process with Carmelo, and that it's not going to be an issue in the locker room. I didn't expect it to be, but at the same time, I can say everything and it doesn't matter because I'm not Ryan Anderson. I can guess and give you a good indication, but it's not the same as hearing it from the source. And after hearing from Ryan and seeing him, I do not anticipate that it's going to be any issue at all for the Rockets from a chemistry standpoint in that locker room. There was no bitterness that I could detect. He seemed very, very comfortable, very, very happy, very, very relieved. And I think that's a great thing for the Rockets because we know that it's a great roster from a talent perspective. To me, it's clearly the second best in the NBA to the Golden State Warriors. The only thing that can hold you back from that level of production on the court is if for some reason the chemistry just is not there, that it's a sum of the parts issue or not as much as, some of the parts are less than the individual. And the biggest threat to that on paper would seem to be Ryan Anderson after a summer of all these trade rumors and this awkwardness. But I did not detect that really being any issue at all for Rockets fans to worry about. I thought he seemed very, very comfortable. I think all the Rockets, including Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni, seemed very comfortable in welcoming him back to the team. And really, going forward, I do think it's an absolute blessing that the Carmelo deal, even if that it got resolved one way or another before trading camp. Because I do think it's possible, if this thing had drug on, if the Knicks had not traded him to Oklahoma City, that yes, it could have been a factor in terms of the chemistry, in terms of how these guys gel. Because everyone's wondering, is the other shoe going to drop? They see a tweet from whoever it may be speculating, well, is this going to be when we get this move that may or may not have happened and we speculate on it for months? At least now there's closure. And so at the end of the day, yes, it would have been nice if the Rockets got Carmelo, but ultimately it's better for everyone involved that this saga just ends and we can focus on what the product on the court is. And if that's good enough, great. If it's not good enough, then Daryl Morey will know with certainty what his options are going forward. So if the Rockets aren't going to get Carmelo, it's at least better that the saga ends rather than drags on indefinitely. I think from a chemistry standpoint, there's just a little bit of relief, I would almost say, around that entire building at Toyota Center. At least now, there's not this awkwardness. We know what the team is, it's over, and we can start focusing on the guys in that locker room and building the best team, the best culture, the best chemistry that they possibly can. So I think more than anything else, my takeaways on Ryan were very positive from what we heard today. Now, second after Ryan, Media Day is always fun because we get to hear from Daryl Morey. Daryl, the Rockets GM, he's available from time to time during the year. We've had him on this show before, but it can be a little spotty because you don't see him on a day-to-day basis because he's not actively involved in terms of practices to the same extent that guys like Mike D'Antoni and, of course, the players are. So you never know when you're going to get to hear from Daryl. But Daryl's a great interview because, well, one, he always thinks big picture. He's the ultimate big picture thinker in terms of contextualizing and the stuff we want to hear from. And beyond that, Daryl's bluntly honest. He might be about the most bluntly honest guy that I've ever encountered in the business. There are a lot of people that have good poker faces, including in that Rockets locker room right now. But Daryl, he might have the least poker face. He tells you what is on his mind. And even if it's not what you expect to hear, even if it might get questioned, especially nationally, by people who aren't as high on the Rockets, he's not afraid of telling you how he sees it. And last year, one of the big takeaways was he came into media day saying that he thought that they could be a top four team in the West, that they wanted home court in at least the first round. And you know what? They got it. Going into media day last year, people thought the Rockets were a 40 to 45 win team, basically a 7 or 8 seed again, coming off of 41-41. Well, you know what? That team last year did gel as he expected. They won 55 games, were the third seed in the West, and they did have home court in the first round, which they used to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 4-1 in the first round. And that was a huge part of their success, and it was a huge part of luring Chris Paul and, of course, getting James Harden to commit to an extension through the year 2022. So that was Daryl's thing last year, and this year, he says it's the best team he's been involved in his 15 years in the NBA. And that is no light statement, because Daryl Morey's had some great teams. You can go all the way back with the Rockets, 2009, when he had Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming, and Ron Artest. When you think back to Media Day in October or September, whatever it was, 2008, it wasn't really believed that any of those guys were significantly past their prime, although other than Artest, they all did encounter injuries. And of course, by the end of that second round series against the Lakers, it was Ron Artest and the role players that we all love, Battier, Scola, Rafer Alston, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, going into that season, Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming, yeah, that was a legitimate title contender. That was loaded. You go back to the 2014 and 2015 teams with Dwight Howard, James Harden, both in their prime. Dwight was an enormous acquisition. Then you pull in with Harden, who in 2014-2015 was the player's MVP. Then Ty Lawson. We all know that it didn't end up working out, but ultimately entering that season that you added Ty Lawson to a team that had James Harden, Dwight Howard, and had been to the Western Conference Finals. Yeah, the expectations were mighty high for that team, too. That was a loaded team. Daryl Morey has been around a lot of talented teams. So when he says it's the best team he's been around in 15 years, he means it. And folks, it absolutely is. It's a team with two legitimate top 10 players, really top 7 players, if you go by the NBA rankings. And I firmly believe that in Chris Paul and James Harden, and two of the smartest guys on the planet playing for one team. And then you have a perfect cast of role players. You've got your defenders, guys like Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute. You've got your shooters, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson. You've got a young big man developing and improving every year in Clint Capella. You've got a great backup in Nene. This is a really, really good team. And if not for the presence of the Warriors, who may be the most talented team of all time, any other year, I'd probably say the Rockets are favorites to win the title. They are that good. And so to hear from Daryl Morey, he doesn't throw out that stuff lightly. He doesn't fill you full of hot air. He tells it like it is. And so to hear Daryl say that it's his best team in 15 years, yeah, I think that should give a lot of needed perspective after a weekend in which, sure, the Rockets took a few hits because a lot of us thought that the Carmelo deal would happen, and ultimately it didn't. And would it have made the Rockets a little bit better? Sure. And I get the disappointment. It always sucks when you think something's going to happen to improve your team, even if it's already great. If you think it's going to improve your team and it doesn't, then, you know, it's easy to feel sorry for yourself a little bit. And nationally, it's easy to see a few tweets about, oh, what happens to the Rockets? Well, folks, it's one of those things. Yeah, the Rockets almost, you know, they almost got the perfect hand. But, folks, they were already sitting on an incredibly, incredibly loaded hand, to make that poker analogy. You know, yeah, maybe they didn't get that perfect turn on the flop or whatever it was, but, I mean, you're already almost at pocket aces when it comes to James Harden and Chris Paul, two top seven players, and you can see that in the smile and the confidence that Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, and all of those guys have. That was part of what I liked hearing from Daryl. The other part of it that I really enjoyed, and Trevor Ariza touched on this too, were his early impressions of Tillman Fertitta, the new owner. Now, Tillman is not technically the new owner. That's why Tillman was not there, because even though it was announced in early September that the Rockets had agreed to sell the team to him, Leslie Alexander, for that $2.2 billion, at the same time, there's a 30 to 45-day period in which he has to get cleared by the NBA's Board of Governors. There's a formal vote. It's basically a formality. Tillman is going to get the team, but he can't officially comment until that's done, and that's probably not going to be until early to mid-October. But at the same time, he can deal with the team privately. It's just a matter he can't go out and publicly speak as a representative. So that's why, as far as we're concerned, the media, he's behind closed doors. We can't talk to him ourselves at this point, and he can't talk to us. However, certainly he can talk to the people involved with the team. And to hear Daryl Morey say that he's been incredibly supportive, again, Daryl is not the type to BS. You can read him like a book. If Daryl is upset about something, you can see it on his face. And he liked what he was seeing from Tillman. He told us that. He told us, actually, that Tillman in some ways had challenged them, and he relished that. He saw some of the things that were already good and was asking how that they could make them even better. And that's what you want. Of course, you want him to acknowledge the strengths of the team from Les Alexander, but at the same time, you don't want just a guy who's just going to simply accept the status quo the way it is. You want a guy who has enough pride to try and improve things if he possibly can. So everything that I've heard in Tillman's background, if you haven't heard a few weeks ago in Locked On Rockets, I had a great interview with Matt Jackson, U of H insider, longtime Houston sports radio host, in which he knows Tillman well through a lot of ventures, particularly with the University of Houston. And he told us some great insight on Tillman. He thinks Tillman's going to be a good owner for this team. But if you had any questions about who Tillman is he going to pay the luxury tax? Is he going to not be as aggressive as Les Alexander is in terms of trying to make everything as good as it can possibly be with this team? Well, the statements from Daryl Morey, the statements with Trevor Ariza. Trevor was referencing the team dinner, which I believe was Sunday night, and I think he said that Tillman was there as well. Those guys love him. They say that he is a winner. And ultimately, I think his purchase of the team on the timeline that he did it shows that. If he was trying to pinch pennies, then certainly he doesn't need to close the deal that early. He could have waited a lot longer. Tad Brown said going into the process that it would probably take 3 to 9 months. Well, folks, the deal was wrapped up in about 6 weeks, or the announcement of the deal. That is incredibly quick. And I think it's clear that Tillman paid a premium to get the deal done early, maybe even prior to the season. Hopefully it closes before the Rockets open the season on October 15th. And that's not something that someone that's trying to just make every single penny on the transaction would do. That's something that someone who genuinely wants the product and is a fan, someone who absolutely cares about making the Houston Rockets as good as they possibly can be, that's what that speaks to, that I want the Rockets, I want to get this deal done and focus on them as soon as possible. That is not a penny pincher. The indications of how this deal went down and the early indications of what's happened since the deal, today was the first time we've actually gotten to talk about those with Daryl Morey, with Trevor Ariza, and a few other players, and everything we heard was largely positive about Tillman Fertitta. So that was a big takeaway as well. Now, a few other takeaways that I had from Monday's media day. I wouldn't say that anything about Chris Paul in particular or even PJ Tucker stood out, because keep in mind, we did have press conferences for both Chris Paul and PJ Tucker in July. If you want to hear my thoughts on that or what the Rockets said back then, those are in our archives here at Locked On Rockets, anywhere, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Audio Boom, et cetera, et cetera. Just look through our archives and you can find those episodes. So I think everyone's already weighed in, including Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, about the significance of those deals, and I think we all understand that it's a good thing. So even though it's a new day of school for them, technically it's their first time to report to training camp for the Rockets, at the same time, they've been Rockets for a while. We talked to them over the summer. We know the team has been active working out informally, even though it hasn't been an official camp. So nothing that was said about Chris Paul really shocked me. Newsflash, we all know Chris Paul is a great player. He's also one hell of a leader, and we learned a lot of that in July. A couple of small things, though, that stood out. Chris Paul said that Harden was the best player that he's ever played with. Folks, that is high praise. And this is not a guy who has been on bad teams. He's played with perennial All-Stars Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan in Los Angeles. David West in his prime when Chris Paul was in New Orleans was certainly no slouch. Chris has played with some phenomenal players in the NBA. And of course, even more if he's considering his Olympic teammates, which I'm not sure if he is or not, in that statement. But the bottom line, to say James is the best player he's ever played with, that is high, high praise, and is reflective of the fact that James, amongst his peers, well, he's been either the player's MVP or runner-up in two of the last 3 years. According to the players, you're the first or second best player in the league in two of the past three. That's how the NBA players, the guys who know it best, see James Harden. So I think that level of quality is important to keep in mind. Yes, I know we're in a superficial world where names stand out. We've heard a lot the last few days, first about Carmelo when the deal to Oklahoma City got done, then last night about Dwayne Wade, the buyout, and Who knows where he'll go? Cleveland, San Antonio, Miami, Oklahoma City have all been referenced as possibilities. Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, guys like that, yes, they're big names. But at the end of the day, they might be big names. They might hit the same on the Q score or remotely close than someone like James Harden. But in terms of impact, folks, it's a sport where four quarters do not equal a dollar. It's about premium talents. And there are only a handful of talents that are truly top five in the world, transformational pieces. James Harden is one of those pieces. So is Chris Paul. So I know that we're in an NBA where sometimes you get three and four superstars teaming up, blah, blah, blah. Or I shouldn't say superstars, three or four stars in name. But you really don't have that many situations other than Golden State where multiple, more than one, obviously top five to, say, eight players on the entire planet are together. Really, I can only think of two. Golden State with Curry and Durant, and Houston with Harden and Paul. That's it. So to hear Chris Paul say that, yeah, it's a reflection of the level of top-end talent that Houston has. I don't know where Houston ranks on your listing of household names that you've heard of across this roster, but in terms of actual top-end talent, Houston is in a great, great place. And then you factor it in with the depth of the roster. As I said, that's where Houston stands out from a lot of teams. People have asked me, well, after the Oklahoma City trade, is Houston still the second-best team after Golden State? Yes, absolutely. And a big part is the depth. Of course, it's Chris Paul and James Harden on the top end. And then you look at the bench, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, Nene, Tarik Black behind them, even Troy Williams. These are all potentially very productive NBA players. So it's the extreme depth that Houston has and that top-end talent. You hear Chris Paul talking about that. That reminds you just why people are so optimistic about this Rockets team. And before we turn our focus to training camp and everything going forward, just a couple of final notes from the Chris Paul and James Harden sessions, because I know everyone wants to focus on those. We've learned that James Harden lost 12 pounds since the start of last year. And that was music to my ears, because if you've listened to me here at Lockdown Rockets, the one question that I have of James Harden is how he handles success. The last 4 years, now he's been very, very good in all of them, but in terms of peak MVP level James Harden, it's almost been like a yo-yo act based on this, how the season went before it. And some of it, I'm not blaming him. Some of it, he's just very young. Even this past year, he was 27. I know he's been around a lot, and he's been on some very good teams in Oklahoma City and Houston, partially because of his own excellence. But he's a young guy, and he's maturing, and some of his issues are just typical immaturity when guys are younger, and now he's evolving and getting better. But whatever the reason, the facts remain, the last few years, James has been at his best when people have doubted him. When you're coming off a season, you know, everybody when they lost in the first round to Portland a few years back, the first year of Dwight, everyone called out his defense, everyone laughed at them. Then he came back and he wins MVP, according to the players, that following year. Then last year, he didn't even make any of the top three All-NBA teams, which was ridiculous, but that had to do with the narrative of the Rockets in that 2015-2016 season. Wasn't even in the top 15, according to the league voters. Yet he comes back, wins runner-up MVP. I think we all know should have won MVP. Rejuvenated more than ever. And, you know, that's the upside. As opposed to coming off 2014-2015, when they're in the Western Conference Finals. We know the offseason he had with Khloe Kardashian, then hanging out with Ty Lawson after that trade. You can go back even to the summer. And then it's not all on him. So part of that offseason, he'd have a very severe ankle sprain that limited his fitness first couple of months of the year. I'm not meaning to pile on him. That's a factor too. But you can also go back to after signing Dwight Howard. There's a little bit of a ton of positive press for the Rockets that year, and his defensive commitment did not seem to be there, at least from the jump, the way it has in other years. So the bottom line with all of this is that you kind of see, and a lot of times it's kind of connected directly to his level of fitness, is James truly locked in? He's a great player no matter what, but he's an MVP player when he's 100% locked in. And for the last few years in Houston, he's been great regardless, but he's been in MVP form when he's been doubted. So what I want to see is what happens when he handles success. And this past year, yeah, I know it ended on a sour note against San Antonio, but by and large, it was a phenomenally successful year. A historic season stat-wise, 55 wins, runner-up in the MVP voting for second time in the last 3 years. Phenomenal. So everyone wants to see, is he going to take that victory lap or is he still going to be locked in? Does he realize that this is what it takes to be the best player on a contender? And this offseason, we've seen it on every level. We've seen it, the recruiting of Chris Paul. He got that done. Then they've been out in Vegas. They've been out, I believe, out in the Bahamas doing all these team events together. And then you hear it today, he's 12 pounds lighter than what he was this time last year. That's an incredible workout. He looks chiseled. He looks great. He says all the right things, but the proof is in the pudding. That weight figure shows you just how hard he's been working. So I'm very optimistic about what we're hearing about James Harden from a competitive standpoint. I think he's locked in. I think he's genuinely excited about this team, and he's ready to be the guy that he was last year. I think that's the James Harden, assuming health, that we can continue to expect going forward. And a final point on that, I heard reactions this afternoon from a lot of people around the NBA to the various media days, and Kevin McHale, former Rockets coach, is now in media. I loved Kevin as a coach. I have not been the biggest fan of Kevin, the color commentator on the Rockets, over the past year or so. I think there has been a little bit of bitterness over the way things went down. And, you know, it's easy to understand why, but at times I think it clouds his objectivity over the franchise. However, as more time passes, things would be easier for him to get a little more objective about what he sees in Houston. And I did think this afternoon he made one point that I agree with wholeheartedly on NBA TV, reacting, also mixing in some of his personal experiences. He said that if there was one flaw with James that he would point out, it's that there were times that when things went well, that he would shut down. And I think we know what he's talking about. The game six against the Clippers in the 2015 playoffs, the game six against the Spurs this past year. And again, some of it's just typical young player immaturity, that kind of stuff. But when things don't go his way, especially because James's game is always somewhat dependent on the officiating, his ability to draw contact is a big part of how great he is. And if the officials aren't doing their job properly, I mean, he's only human. It's easy for anybody to get discouraged. But to actually be a true MVP, the top of the line, no matter what it is, you've got to fight through. And McHale's point was sometimes in the past, you've seen him sort of check out a little bit when the going gets really, really tough, say, hey, this just isn't our night. And that's human nature. I think 95% of players do that. And I think 95% or 99% even of people do that at their jobs or in their personal lives on a day-to-day basis. That's just human nature. That's not a huge indictment of James Harden. However, for James to truly be a foundation-level MVP year after year, it's something he has to grow out of. And McHale's point today was that he thinks that the presence of Chris Paul is perfect. And I've said this going back to June, because if James is a little hands-off in terms of his leadership style, Chris is hands-on. Chris grabs the bull by the horns. And so people say, well, how are those two going to work together? Actually, I think that contrast can make them work really well, because if Chris needs to lay off a little bit, James is the guy to give him a little bit of perspective. But the flip side is that if Chris senses James having some sort of withdrawal, then Chris is the kind of guy that I think James will respect even more than a coach, even more than a coach. You can say all the right things as a coach, but NBA players, there's a certain respect that goes amongst, you know, top-line NBA players. And so for James not to just have another elite talent like Chris Paul, because certainly Dwight Howard was an elite talent, especially at the start of his Houston career, but Dwight was a little aloof as well in terms of that on-court leadership vibe. I think he and James, I don't want to say they were wired similarly because they came to it from different perspectives, but there were some similarities that neither were that hands-on. Chris is hands-on, and so I think that could be an absolutely beautiful marriage from a competitive standpoint. I think James could help Chris loosen up at times if Chris is driving people a little too hard. But the flip side, I also think that Chris can help James from time to time, making sure that he doesn't get to the point that he did or seemed to in the first half of that Game 6 against the Spurs last year. And Kevin McHale made that point on NBA TV, and I think he's absolutely right. Now, those are kind of my closing media day thoughts. There's a lot of great stuff. As I said leading off, if you haven't heard, check out Rockets.com. The videos are there from all the major press conferences. Daryl and Mike D'Antoni were together. Of course, we heard from Chris and James, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella. Rockets media relations staff did a great job making all these guys available, and they took a lot of questions. And besides the videos, all the Twitter feeds, as I said, myself, Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle, Clutch Fans, MK Bauer, Mark Berman, Rockets Insider, a lot of great content. And also check the Sports Talk 790 feed, because Matt Thomas over there, SportsMT on Twitter, had a lot of separate interviews where he got to ask his own questions, because, of course, 790, I work with them as well. It's the flagship of the Rockets. So in addition to the Media Day press conferences, got some more intel from those interviews that 790 had, which are, again, at Sports Talk 790 on Twitter, at SportsMT, and also at sports790.com. The website, all of those interviews are archived. I believe they're on the Matt Thomas page. But yeah, Media Day was fun, but at the end of the day, it's all talk. Tomorrow, it turns to actual basketball. Practice, I believe it's between 11 and 2. We're going to get to hear from them after it's over. That's the plan. So I think start checking your Twitter feeds 2 or 3 tomorrow afternoon. That's when we'll get to hear how training camp looks. Not going to speculate too much, because I'll wait to see what the players themselves say about it tomorrow. It's not like we have long to wait. But a couple of things as sort of a preview for what to look for. One thing we did learn, PJ Tucker was there, but he's been dealing with a nagging hamstring. It doesn't seem like he's going to be ready to go at the start of camp. I'm sure he'll be there, but it doesn't seem like he's going to actively be involved in drills. As far as what that means for the rotation, because certainly they expect PJ to play anywhere between 25 and 30 minutes per game, I would expect. I think it certainly means more minutes for Luke Bamute. I think the rotation is going to feature both PJ and Luke anyway, but in the meantime, Luke can play a few more minutes. But I think Luke, because of his length, is going to be more at the four, especially in Mike D'Antoni's offense. I don't think he's going to play that much three with the way the Rockets play. Now, Luke is a decent shooter, but he's not a great shooter. I think generally he's a good shooter for a four, and you combine that with his length, he's going to get most of his time there, although conceivably there could be some matchups that are more advantageous for PJ on the block than Luke, and or Luke on the perimeter than PJ. I'm sure they'll mix and match from time to time when those guys play together. But short-term, PJ out, I think Luke Bamute is going to get more minutes at the four spot because of his length. So the question is, who's going to step in? And preseason kicks off next week. If PJ's not ready then, who could conceivably play PJ's minutes in the rotation? Who to look for? And there are a lot of possibilities. Today they said, you know, there's opportunities. And, of course, anybody on the roster is capable of earning playing time. They are genuinely open to anyone at this camp who stands out. But the guy who I would think that has a real opportunity here is Troy Williams. Troy was great down the stretch at times with the Rockets last year. Remember that Phoenix game when he hit six threes? That was a game that Harden and I believe Ariza sat out. So there were some minutes for him at the wing spots. Also keep in mind that the Rockets, of course, they have a great three-man guard rotation with Harden, Paul, and Eric Gordon, but they don't really have a fourth guard they can trust. Now, I don't think that it's an open rotation spot because most nights CP3, James, and Eric are going to take all of those guard minutes. However, if there are injuries, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon have both had minor knickknacks here and there throughout their NBA career. If there are injuries or if there's a lead or if there's foul trouble, yeah, three is a little bit thin. So I think they'd want someone who can step in at one of the guard spots. It does not have to be point guard. And I think Troy Williams is the best fit because he had moments late last year. He was great in summer league. He's a great defensive player, and we know they want that. He's disciplined. If anything, he was a little limited last year because they didn't acquire him until well after the midway point of the season, didn't have much time in the system. Now he knows the system. He's athletic. He can play both the two and the three. He's got an ability. I wouldn't say he's a great shooter. He's streaky, but he certainly has shown some ability. He's got a decent form, things you can work with. So I think PJ being out, it's a chance for Troy Williams certainly to take PJ's minutes in the short term, but also make a case for, hey, I know there may not be a fourth guard rotation spot in name, but if you need that for whatever reason, a knick-knack injury, you know, you can rest one of those guys if you need it. Or if there's foul trouble, you can trust me. I think it's going to be an opportunity for Troy Williams. Very athletic, very smart, good defender, checks a lot of boxes. I was personally surprised after as well as he played this summer, scoring over 25 points a game for most of summer league, that he was able to stick with the Rockets given their depth. I thought someone might take him for a rotation role, but I think the Rockets, Troy's comfortable here because obviously it's a great clubhouse, a great team, and the Rockets, now this is part of what having a great depth means, that you can get guys like that, and you know, even if you have an injury to PJ Tucker, it's a chance for Troy Williams to shine, and given his work ethic, given how great he looked this summer, I would not be surprised at all if he takes advantage of it. Now, I know in theory you'd like to say, well, the fourth guard, wouldn't it be ideal if that guy could play point guard, which Troy Williams clearly can't? I really don't think so, because again, unless Chris in particular gets hurt, we heard again today, it was an interview that Chris did with Matt Thomas over at 790. Chris mentioned that, you know what's going to happen when I'm not in the game? Then James is in the game, referring to the point guard spot. And if you look back at those Clippers plus minus totals the last few years, there has been a huge drop-off when Chris Paul does not play at point guard. So the bottom line, we heard it when Chris Paul signed. Mike D'Antoni said his initial take was that essentially they would stagger the minutes between Chris and James to where all 48 minutes, one of those guys would be on the floor. In other words, you'd always have at least one true elite floor general on the floor at all times. And they kind of walked it back a little bit over the summer. I forgot what interview it was, but it might have been Daryl saying, well, you never know. We'll see what happens in camp. But no, you could hear it in Chris's voice today. He was very excited that in those minutes that he's not in the game, that someone that is fully capable of driving the bus, i.e. James Harden, will still be in the game. And if it's a big deal to Chris Paul and Mike D'Antoni already said it, I feel pretty confident that's going to happen. So I don't think that fourth guard has to be a point guard. I think it can be a two. It can be a wing, even though you already have James Harden and Eric Gordon theoretically on your depth chart at small at shooting guard. To me, I mean, a depth chart's just name only. It's the rotation plays out completely differently. I think Troy Williams has a chance to earn minutes with a good camp. And the P.J. Tucker injury, I think he's the guy that at the outset, if P.J.'s limited by a nagging hamstring, Troy Williams is going to have a chance to really make that case, not just for forward minutes as long as P.J. is dealing with the hamstring, but also for some guard minutes here and there as well. Other thing to keep in mind with that would be, okay, if Chris or James is technically the point guard at all times, then what are the differences in how you play with both of them on the court at once? And what are the differences when you have just Chris or just James? That, I think, is something that they're going to figure out fairly early because, you know, you're really only going to have probably about 20 to 24 minutes if you do this staggering the way you expect, because I would expect Chris to miss about 16 minutes a game at 32 years old. I don't think you want Chris Paul to play more than, 32 minutes. And James, ideally, I don't think you want to play more than 36 minutes just for mileage. Even though James is younger, let's not get crazy. Let's not run into the ground and have some fatigue issues that we probably saw at the end of last year. So that means you're probably looking about 25 minutes a game that those two are not out there together. So they're both great point guards, but they're great in different ways. So I think you can also start to look as early as tomorrow as, okay, what groups is one better with? What groups are some players better with than the others? And you can start to see, you know, obviously the Rockets have some shooters. The Rockets also have some options with more length. And so I think you can start, and then even the big men, you know, there are guys who are more high flyers like Clint Capella. There are guys who are more below the rim types, such as Nene, Tarik Black. It's kind of a little bit of both. Now you can think with Tarik Black, boy, back in the day when he was with the Rockets for a short stint back in 2014, 2015, he and James Harden had some amazing chemistry. So those are the types of things besides the Troy Williams, P.J. Tucker, Troy Williams filling in for P.J. Tucker in his absence. They'll try some other guys too, but I think Troy has the best crack at it. The other thing I'm going to watch early on is who seems to have the chemistry with the James only minutes of point guard and who seems to have the best chemistry with Chris, because that could also factor into how exactly Mike D'Antoni juggles his rotation once you get to the regular season, which starts October 17th against the Warriors. So, with all that said, I will wrap it and get ready for tomorrow when we actually get to see basketball on the floor. It feels so good to be talking not about what-ifs, because we talked Carmelo, I've enjoyed it the last few months, but now we actually get to talk basketball and we know who is there and talk about this great team that we already have here in Houston. And after hearing from them today, I think in addition to it being a great talent fit, I think it's a very good fit chemistry-wise, culture, personalities. Everything we heard was spot on today. So I, again, they're not the Warriors, but other than the Warriors, I could not be more optimistic about this team going into camp. And as I've said, I firmly believe, if healthy, I think they're the second-best team in the NBA, and I think they have high potential to win anywhere 57, 58, all the way to even low 60s, depending on exactly how the breaks go this year. This has the potential to be a really special group. And that's kind of where I'll close today, because Media Day is about big picture thinking. Tomorrow, we'll get back to the nitty-gritty of exactly what those training camp battles are once it officially kicks off. Again, 11 a.m., I think, is when the players report, and supposed to wrap up around 2, and that's when those of us in the media will get to talk to them. But for now, enjoy your Monday night. Hopefully, the Astros take care of business against the Arlington Rangers tonight. We'll talk about that, and then tomorrow afternoon, we'll get back to basketball, both on Twitter and right here at Locked On Rockets. So yeah, on Twitter, if you're not already following me, please do, at Ben Dubose, or the show, at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. So, yeah, hope everybody enjoys their Monday and look forward to telling you guys what we see tomorrow at Toyota Center. We don't get to see the actual practice at training camp. We do get to see a little bit. They do a few of the drills. We just don't get to see the hardcore scrimmages, that sort of stuff. But whatever we see, and especially whatever we hear, because we'll get to talk to most of the principals, look forward to talking with you guys a little bit more tomorrow about what we learned from camp. For now, have a good evening.